For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone, to episode number 227 of MSRcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Carrie, the Metal Geek, along with
Sean, the Metal Pigeon.
And we have a very special guest this evening. His name is Mr. Colin Elliott. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well. Hello, boys and girls.
Oh, are you going to talk like that the whole time?
A little creepy, a little British-like, you know?
All right.
No, I'm not, actually. Oh, damn it. This is my normal voice, people.
Damn it. You're a bit local bass player. You're a local friend of mine. You play bass in Mr. Plow, which is a band. We'll get into that. We're going to play them later. It's a band based on a great character from The Simpsons.
Indeed.
You're also a huge vinyl collector. We're going to talk about that.
It's more of a sickness, but sure.
Okay. Collector, sickness. I haven't got to the sickness phase yet.
But I'm not down with the sickness. Just clarification.
Oh.
Good.
Wow. It's going to be one of those type of episodes. And you also are an admin of a record collecting group on Facebook, and we're going to get into that as well. But let's talk about the first band that we played on this episode. Album of the year?
They're making a case for it.
Yeah, they sure are.
I was anticipating this album. I didn't think it would be
this good.
Yeah. I didn't think that I would respond to it this much. Although it kind of makes sense, you know, when you think about it. I was pretty critical of Shadows of a Dying Sun over time. I think when it came out, I was trying to be more forgiving of it, and I gave it kind of a pass.
Okay.
But that's the album I go back to the least. So when they did Winter's Gate, it was like such a sharp detour. They're, you know, doing black metal. They're being really intense.
There's not a lot of black metal on this album.
Brutal, no. I mean, and so I almost feel like they kind of, in the standard Insomnium sound, sort of lost the plot or lost their way or just kind of overextended themselves in Shadows of a Dying Sun.
Yeah.
And they had to do a detour and do something else in order to get back to what they do really well. And you can hear the influence from Sentenced, you know, that kind of Finnish melancholy in the music and the guitar riffs and stuff. I think this is their best album. I think it's in the running for their best album. I think the songs are the best.
Probably my top. It's probably, I don't know, maybe top. It's in my top three for sure. I don't know if it's made top spot yet.
Oh, for the year?
No, for
Insomnium.
For Insomnium.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I haven't been able to stop listening to it, and it's right up there with, you know, One for Sorrow and in terms of just the...
I think One for Sorrow is my number one. This might be number two.
Yeah.
Winter's Gate, number three.
Yeah, that'd be respectable.
We agree on that?
Yeah.
Holy crap. I finally agree on something.
I think them getting Yanni, for ex-Sonata Arctica guitarist...
Yeah.
...was like... not only a smart move for the touring situation.
He's brand new to the band.
He's on the album. Yeah. And you can hear him doing backing vocals a little bit. It kind of fits. Like, he has a voice, you know?
I'm just wanted to say real quick, I'm not super familiar with Insomnium, but I'm going to quickly learn the error of my ways. But I assume you guys are talking about Jami Limatainen.
Mm-hmm.
I love the first three. Well, it's technically the first four Sonata Arctica records
classics
that he's on. The first three, Reckoning Night, I kind of didn't like quite as much. But long story short, I had a great time hanging out with Jani Limatainen in San Antonio after a show. We proceeded to down a 24-pack of Heineken that he pulled off the tour bus and got drunk outside the tour bus, just on the streets of San Antonio,
as you do.
But I was a huge Sonata Arctica geek back in the day, in the mid 2000s, and he was the central part of the band for me over everybody else.
What do you think of him currently?
You know, I've only listened to one song, and I think it, you know, something I came across either on YouTube or on Facebook.
I've heard the new album. I don't hate it, but it's not. There's a couple of good tracks that they're memorable.
Memorable.
I need to drink another whiskey.
We're talking about Sonata's new record.
Yeah, I know you're a fan, Sean. So
I mean, the problem with Sonata is the fact that Yanni's not in the band anymore, and that's clearly been the problem ever since that he left. And there's something about you miss a crucial ingredient when Chris DeGarmo left Queensryche. Everything suffered.
Good.
You know? Wait, Chris DeGarmo left Queensryche?
And there's just certain magics you have that you can't replace, even if you get a good guitarist. And Sonata has good musicians. They just don't have the right mix of two songwriters in there or someone to bounce ideas, for Tony to bounce ideas off of, who can shut him down and go, that's stupid, Tony. Let's do something you know,
better, that's
better,
good.
Better than that. Yeah. And he fits in Insomnium. I think it's going to be a, I can't wait to see him on tour with handling the vocals, being one of the front men on stage. That's going to be, I already bought my ticket for that show.
Yanni's going to be singing.
He's going to be the Queen vocalist and the, you know, and guitar is live, because the guy who does the Queen vocals on the album, he has a day job he can't get away from. So,
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I definitely am going to be buying VIP tickets for that show, because I plan to get all my vinyl signed by them.
Nice.
Because I have two guys on Winter's Gate. When they played last time, I was only able to get two guys to sign it. So I'm going to get everything signed. I got the new album. I got this. It's cool. We'll talk about the group later, but from one of that group, I begged this dude. I'm like, hey, sell it to me. Come on, dude. Come on, sell it to me. He did, for what he paid for it. It's a limited silver vinyl. Only 200 were made.
Nice. Wow. And you got this out of the Asylum?
Yep.
Which we'll be talking about, but that's awesome. I'm glad you scored something that you really wanted out of the group. That warms my mental heart.
And it came with a CD, too, which has not left my CD player in my car.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, Insomnium, they're coming early next year with Omnium Gatherum and...
April, I think, of next year.
April, yeah.
April 11th. It's a Saturday show for us.
Oh, it is a Saturday show. Nice.
Well, I'm going to have to geek out with you lads and probably join you to this show, especially learning that Yanni is now is in Insomnium. I apparently have been asleep behind the wheel, so that is awesome.
I honestly didn't realize it until a couple weeks after it was announced, and I was like, wait, is that Yanni... The Yanni, I think.
I'm from Finland.
Yeah. Yanni Finland? Is that Yanni Finland?
Yanni Finland. Wait. Let me finish here. Insomnium, one of my favorite bands in the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years?
No, me too.
Absolutely.
Me too, yeah.
Swallow the Sun, same.
This isn't going to be the last we talk about that album this year.
I have a feeling it's going to creep up many times. Because it's the number one for you.
It's recency.
This is a hard year
because that's all I've been listening to for the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So right now it's number one naturally, but there were so many great records released this year, and the trend this year has been all those great records were by bands I hadn't heard of until this year.
Yeah.
So there's the first band.
There's a veteran
band.
There's been a lot of great albums from bands that I'm a big fan of.
I'll be honest. There's been a lot of disappointments from veteran bands this year. That's been my overriding consensus.
Don't tease me like that. Who?
The new bands have risen and the old bands are sucking. This just this year.
I've been working on my list and it's quite different.
Yeah, until Insomnium, my list was predominantly like a new band.
What bands have disappointed you?
Sonata was chief among them.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
But I had to go back through the ringer and check. But yeah, I mean, it was just every major release that was Camelot was a big one earlier in the year. You know,
Camelot had a new album out this year.
Exactly. Yeah. So
holy fuck, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. I mean,
I maybe knew that. I don't remember.
It was rough. You know.
All right.
We'll dissect that later.
Yes, for sure. So, Mr. Colin, Mr. Plow.
Aye, sir.
You play bass in this band now. How did this happen? When did this occur?
Well, I came into the band in February of this year. I'm filling in, potentially permanently taking the spot of the original and longtime bass player, Greg Green. Greg's had some things come up in his life, and so I gladly obliged when I was offered the spot. Happened to know the guys. Justin Wagner, the front man, incredible musician, great vocalist, brilliant mind, admire the man quite a bit. He, I knew him through Sanctus Bellum, which is his sort of doom / traditional metal band. And,
features a couple friends of the show, like Maurice, who comes on the show quite often and plays band we've never ever fucking heard of before. Every time we're like, what the fuck, man, where are all these bands coming from?
Yeah, no, Maurice and Jan. Sanctus Bellum's a great outfit. Yeah. If you guys listening have not given them a chance or heard of them, check them out. Sanctus Bellum.
They're also also in the band Blues Funeral.
Yeah, and Blues Funeral's
a phenomenal. They just recorded something new.
Yeah.
So something new coming out soon.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Those guys, the Blues Funeral guys, continue to make a great album after album. Each album somehow manages to surpass the expectations of the of going in from the previous album to the next album.
Yeah,
I'm always super excited to see what they've done, and fortunately they let me in on things as they develop. But going back to Mr. Plow, I started with them in February. It's been a
steep, who else is in the band?
Steep learning curve. So you've got Justin Wagoner, I call him Daddy Plow, as it were. It's he's the guitarist and the vocal and the lead vocalist, if you will. And then there's Jeremy Stone. He is second guitarist, plays leads and rhythm. And then Corey Cousins, who also plays with Blues Funeral and Sanctus Bellum on drums. And then, yep, of course, myself on bass. So we're a four-piece, two guitars, bass, and drums.
When are y'all going to play again?
That's a good question. We were going to take up a show and play with High Desert Queen in December, but it just, timing around the holidays was tricky, and a couple of the guys couldn't do it, so that didn't happen. Our last show was opening up for Nebula in August. That was a lot of fun. We opened for Monolord back in late April or May of this year. And as of right now, we don't have a specific next show lined up. We've got some ideas and things in the works. But when you got two lawyers, a paralegal and a nurse
right,
in a metal band, it's really hard to get together to practice, much less to coalesce for a show. It's tough. It's tough. We're all urban working professionals, and especially when you work in law, it can mean long hours when you're going to trial. And the three of us, Jeremy, Justin, and I, we all work in litigation, so it's long hours and a lot of stay after 6 p.m. type stuff.
Sounds super metal.
Yeah, it's terribly not metal.
I don't think most jobs really are.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to have a non-metal job so you could afford to pay for your metal.
Exactly. And there's it's been a complaint, this is totally aside and random, but people at work are, I work with a bunch of women generally. I'm the only male staff member, and one of my big complaints, and I've even talked to the management about it, is like, man, these girls are always talking and chatting and hanging out. It's like, I come here to work hard and leave at 5:30 so I can have a social life afterward. So that's my complaint about the workplace, I guess, is that, it's a place to work and get the heck out of. And,
agreed.
And that's the way I treat it and look at it. I like to have fun after work, and so I like to get my work done.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I think we're going to actually, this whole next set is going to start with Mr. Plow, from the last album, came out in 2018 or 2019.
Yep. 2018.
Maintain Radio Silence is the album. We're going to get into the song called
Samizdat.
Samizdat. Thank you for pronouncing that for me.
And do you know what that is?
I do not.
So very quickly, Samizdat is a term that refers to illicit media that was shared and exchanged and distributed in the Eastern Bloc. And, obviously there were a lot of Soviet restrictions on media and music, literature, what have you. So Samizdat, refers, it's kind of a noun, if you will, refers to the, and a verb at the same time. It basically refers to the existence and the exchange of, shall we call it, bootlegs or illicit media. In modern day, a bootleg is something that might, give the connotation of something of lesser quality. But in this sense, it was actually true art that was just being restricted because of an economic and political system. And so anyway, there's a little cool, backstory to
that. We need the song from The More You Know from there you go, little rainbow. So this whole next set is going to be local band. So we're going to have Mr. Plow. We're going to have Malignant Altar. We'll talk about them. And we're going to have something brand new from our friends in The Scourge.
Yeah.
So here's some Houston metal for you.
Welcome back to MSR Cast 227. And
227. The old TV show.
What old TV show?
227?
With Jack and Harry? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Y'all don't know that show.
Never heard of it.
Holy crap.
What is this?
Enlighten us, wise one.
It was just a late 80s sitcom.
Huh.
Had the maid from the Jeffersons on it?
Man, I was born in the late 80s.
Oh, fuck you.
Unfortunately.
Damn it.
I missed all the good times. Where have all the good times gone?
What is that?
Van Halen. Anyway, let's move on.
That's not the same song to Good Times.
Death Draws Near Dark.
Yes.
It was a song we were listening to by The Scourge. Houston thrash metal, I would say institution by this point.
Yeah, new album drops this weekend.
Yeah. As we're recording, it's tomorrow, right?
That's correct.
And I haven't gotten the chance to see them live
Past
few years.
Dude,
the last time I saw them,
it
was long before they had joined up with James.
Yeah, so two of the members of this band now are members of Hellstar.
Yeah.
The guitar player and bass player.
That's right. And then Alex Earhart, the drummer, is a wizard drum child, plays jazz, rock, metal. He is he's a do-all. He's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant skinsman.
Very cool. Yeah, that's good, man. This is it's a really thrash-tastic album. There's been a lot of good thrashes this year. This is creeping up there.
Yeah.
This is really good stuff. If you haven't heard these guys, go check them out on their Bandcamp. We'll link everything in the show notes.
Yeah.
But, you know, buy the album. And buy the digital, buy the physical release, buy whatever you can.
They have good PR working for them because this is getting around on a lot of metal sites outside of Houston. So.
That's awesome to hear.
Yeah. They're going to be a name, like, nationally and maybe globally, too, at some point. So
I think so.
I think so, yeah.
This is my most anticipated release for this year. I pre-ordered the vinyl. Garrick has actually been been my bass instructor and mentor. I call him Sensei. He calls me Mijo. You know, we have a very special relationship. And Andrew's one of my best friends, as is Alex. All three of the guys are super talented.
They are.
I'm terribly biased because they are my friends, but they really have put out a phenomenal record.
We've been trying to get them in the studio for a long time. And the last time I think I spoke to Andrew, and he's like, yeah, wait till the new album comes out. Guess what? New album's coming out. Get in the studio. Let's do it.
I'll give him a nudge for you guys.
That's right. Make him listen to this episode, and then you hear us talk about him not coming on the show. Do it, man.
I'll guilt trip him like a Jewish grandmother.
It's true. I had Jewish grandmothers. It's fucking true. There's no denying that. So before The Scourge, we had something from another local band, Malignant Altar. And if you like your fucking death metal, like slow and doomy and fucking badass.
Chugga, slow double bass. Yes.
So if you don't know who Malignant Altar is, do you know, you want to tell them a little about them?
I know that Dauber's in the band.
He is.
Dauber Beverly of Oceans of Slumber fame.
Amazing. Like, I think we talked about, was it on this show or Metal Geeks, that not blowing smoke up his ass or biasness or anything, but he's one of my fucking favorite drummers. He is so fucking talented.
He's a true musician. He takes his craft very seriously. He practices like hell. He's in so many projects. He excels with anything that's thrown at him. I agree. He's probably the most well-rounded extreme metal drummer.
Oh yeah.
In Houston.
I've known him for a long time too. He's every single one of his projects has been fucking top quality, top notch, you know. This reminds me a lot of Infernal Dominion, the style. And it's good to see them back. Seeing back doing this kind of stuff. So it also features Bo Beasley, who was his bandmate in Insect Warfare. So check him out, dude. Go to their Bandcamp, which is malignantaltar-maggotstomp.bandcamp.com. I don't know.
Seems apropos.
Yeah, it seems right. I think some of the physical releases are sold out, but you could buy the digital version from them. I got the physical CD. And I heard they have a vinyl now, too, so I'll be on the lookout for that.
Adding it to the shopping list.
That's right. Speaking of vinyl, before that, Mr. Plow, we mm-hmm. played them. Maintain Radio Silence is the album. Samizdat, is that mm-hmm. correct?
That's right.
We know all about that term now.
Yeah, I gave you guys a little dorky history lesson, but that's been a really cool thing for me coming into the band is looking into the meaning or the source or the inspiration behind the songs. You know, Justin Wagner, the guitar player and main vocalist, he's a big fan of Kurt Vonnegut, and the previous album before this was all songs in some way, shape, or form, you know, made as a tribute to his works. And
very cool.
You know, we're all metal geeks, we're all metal dorks here, and you know, stuff like that has a real strong historical founding or, you know, really cool source material for as inspiration for music writing. I love, you know,
some of us are more metal geeks than others though.
Yes, this is true.
Some of us started a podcast called Metal Geeks because we're such metal geeks. Just saying, I don't know. Let's talk about vinyl, man.
You got it.
You are the vinyl collecting god. You said it was a sickness. Do you even buy CDs at all?
I do when there's not a vinyl available.
Okay. I'm getting to that point myself, but...
No, I like the medium. You know, all the things you've heard before. I like having lyrics I can read. I'm not looking at some tiny little CD booklet. You know, I am the guy that sits down and listens to a record start to finish, or, you know, an album start to finish. And I like being able to read all the credits, read the lyrics, you know, who the cover art is, you know, is attributed to, you know, and I just love the medium on so many levels. I just think it's fun. It's vinyl adds another level of another level to the music, you know, and, you know, you have music in and of itself, but vinyl, it's fun on a whole lot of levels.
Why do you think it's making a comeback now?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I read some fairly reputable article from a reputable source, you know, and it was about how 30 to 40 somethings right now are more interested in nostalgia than any previous generation ever has been. I just think that we're in somewhat of a, you know, society happens somewhat, you know, things in society happen somewhat cyclically. And I think that this is just that, that cycle coming around. I think vinyl died in the late 80s. CDs were introduced in the early 80s. CDs slowly pushed vinyl to the side. People loved having a format, you know, after 8 tracks and vinyl, where you could just skip tracks and go from one track to the next. And, you know, there's a certain nostalgia, you know, present with my generation, people slightly younger than me. And then, of course, the old guard that never lost their love for vinyl, that's still around, fortunately, guiding us youngsters. But for my generation, I just think there's that revitalized interest in going back to the roots of everything. You know, there's such a huge interest in old school metal now. You know, heavy metal died, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And now it's, you know, since the early 2000s.
I don't know if it died. It just went into hibernation.
It kind of went into hibernation. Oh, no, there were still amazing things happening. You know,
In the eyes of the public, it sort of died, but not
correct. It didn't rule the earth anymore. You know, when heavy metal ruled the earth in the, you know, up to about 92, and then it went into hibernation, and it's risen again. And the same can just be said for vinyl. I think it's more than anything. Another part of it, I'll just quickly say, is hard media. You know, things in the early 2000s, you know, with the advent of, well, late 90s, with the advent of LimeWire, Napster, and all that, everybody was downloading stuff.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about that, because, like, right now, it's everything the digital download. Not even a download, it's a digital stream, so you got Spotify, you have all that stuff, which is really convenient. Listening to music on a physical media, to a lot of people, seems, like, stupid. Why am I going to waste my time actually getting up and turning the record over to hear what I want to hear? I just want to hear this one song and just play it anytime you're at. I listen to Spotify all the time because it's really convenient for me, not having to carry a bunch of CDs around or, you know, whatever. And I look at it in a way, it's a way to discover new music. It's a way to remember back in the day where you used to be able to go into like a sound warehouse and say, hey, I want to hear what this album sounds like. And they'd take the wrapper off for you and let you listen to it on a CD player. Mm-hmm. That's what Spotify is to me.
Yeah. Try before you buy.
If you like a band and you support a band, either buy their digital, you know, output, buy physical media, buy the vinyl, buy CD, whatever. But don't just rely. This is, I guess, me standing on a on a soapbox here, but don't just rely on Spotify for them to get paid, because they're not going to.
I mean, the streams do count for something.
Like, but not much.
When you listen to their streams, at least you're in some way contributing to them rather than just like downloading the album.
And if you go see a band live and you know they're going to have merch, or they know you're going to have their vinyl of the new album, buy it directly from the band, because they're going to get the most money out of that.
I mean, you know, the thing with vinyl you just said, the funny thing is like how much people, like younger kids
who are just turning 18 and 20 and whatever. They're into all that stuff now. And there's something about the era of the extreme digitization smartphone era we're in right now where it's – I don't know. This doesn't sound stupid, but it's the same kind of thing that draws people to like instead of getting a Keurig coffee maker, they want to get like a pour over. Like pour over is kind of becoming the big trend now in coffee at home.
I don't even know what that is.
It's like – it's just like a plastic cone or like a ceramic cone you put on top of your cup.
Mm-hmm.
Paper filter, Japanese way of pouring the coffee.
That's the way I prefer my coffee.
Measuring the coffee. I do it too. Measuring your coffee.
Oh, never heard of this.
Having a handheld burr grinder.
I don't drink coffee, Sue.
So instead of like an electric grinder, you have a handheld grinder. Just something – there's something tactile about that experience. And the thing is like
– hitting it on the head, man.
Yeah. You want that kind of tactile experience because everything is digital, which means that everything is disposable to some extent. But when you buy a vinyl, you're committing to that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's something tangible you can have in your life and you can, you know, hold. And, you know, when you're a teenager, part of your metal upbringing was the posters and Metal Edge and all the stuff you'd have. And the
Metal Edge. You know, I bought a few of those.
Club, the fan
Rip,
club stuff you'd
Rip
get.
Rip magazine.
And, yeah. And all that stuff.
Metal Maniacs, man. That's
part of your identity.
My shit right there.
Kids don't have that anymore.
No.
If everything's on your phone, what else is there, you know? So
in the past 3-4 years, I've really gotten back into collecting vinyl, especially not everything is going to be on vinyl for me. It's just my favorite bands that I want to collect everything of. I had a small collection, which has exponentially grown the past couple years. The problem with vinyl, especially new vinyl, like the 180 gram, real thick shit, it's expensive as huck.
Yeah.
Expensive as hell. And I tend to like to collect... if it's not a new album, I like to collect the original pressings. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You and me both.
I've bought a couple original amazing Halloween albums from you personally that are pride in my collection. I need to collect the rest of that band.
I'll help you out.
Yeah, there you go. There's certain bands that I want to collect, you know, the vinyl of. Insomnium is one of them. I'm going to collect all of them. Arion, I'm starting there, but some of them are really expensive. Halloween's another one of the bands. Everybody knows that I'm a Monkees nerd, right? My fucking Monkees vinyl collection is massive now because I'm starting to collect fucking, here's a Japanese import of this album. Why not?
Well, the thing that works in your favor, too, is that, not being unkind, but there aren't a ton of people out there looking for Monkees vinyl present day. And that works.
No, there is.
Oh, no, I'm sure
there
are.
Not in the metal groups, but yeah.
But I wouldn't even say in your age group, but I could be wrong.
No, in the metal groups that we're in.
Oh, sure.
But like when I was trading the dude that I bought the Insomnium, he's like, hey, do you have anything for trade? I was like, here, let me send you what I have. He's like, shit, man, you have a lot of Monkees. I'm like, yeah, I know. No, that's just me.
And that was the end of the conversation.
Yeah, pretty much. I have a lot of Monkees, I have a lot of Beatles, but I have a lot, I have some original Anthrax stuff, you know, Megadeth and Iron Maiden I'm collecting. And like I saw the remaster of Iron Maiden at like a half price the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Number of the Beast.
Oh, Number of the Beast.
I'm like, you know what? I'm going to wait for an original pressing. I was like,
the crazy thing, it doesn't cost much more.
No.
And that's the thing, is if you're kind of willing to look and you can be a little patient, you'd be surprised. I mean, there's a lot of overpriced records out there, and there is a certain hype. And, you know, with this resurgent, there is a sort of artificial inflation that happens.
Sure. And a lot of the Record Store Day has a lot to do with that, too. It's like,
Record Store Day is an institution designed to help record stores. It's not designed for the
collector,
the collector or the music.
Because sometimes there's such a limited amount of an item, and the price is so high, it's sometimes ridiculous. But you know,
well, and that's one thing you'll see, this disparity. It's, I have a friend that, you know, runs a record store, and very quickly, like, he, you know, has a remastered, beautiful new version of a Eurythmics record, and it's he's trying to sell it for $45. He paid $37. That's his that's his wholesale price as a record store owner. Meanwhile, that same record in its original form is in a bin across the store for $10, for $5 or $10.
Same with the video games, man. I used to work at a GameStop, and I know what they paid. when they charge $59.99 for the game, they're paying $51, $52 wholesale for that game. And then it's like you have like, you know, Best Buy had their deal where you can get 20% off. In Walmart now, you can go into any store and you can buy like a $59 game. It's $48 there.
Yep.
Because
they can undercut.
They can undercut because they're not making money off you buying the game there. They're making money off, hey, shit, I'm in Walmart. Hey, look, there's a vinyl album I need. I need fucking bread. I need milk. I need all this other
It's not a moneymaker. And it amazes me how brick and mortar stores survive.
So it's so hard. Yeah. So a video game store, a vinyl store just to sell records, you know, it's hard for me to fathom how they do survive without branching out to other things, because you go in there, you're like, oh, this album here is $45. I really want this, but how much is it on Amazon? $27. I'm just going to buy from Amazon. And I hate to say that, but I mean, I do make a point to support my local stores. I go into Sound Exchange all the time. Even if it costs more than like buying it online, I will go buy something from, because I know them for so long. I've been friends with them. And it's same thing with like video games and stuff like that. It's like, it's hard, man.
You're helping the store owner, but also to your advantage as the consumer, as the buyer, you hold it and you see it. There's so many things that go wrong with shipping, with online transactions.
Oh, for sure.
Finding something physically, holding it in your hands. I'd gladly spend $5 or $10 more having it in my hands than risking buying it from, you know, Joe Blow on Amazon and then it arriving smashed up or broken or whatever. So there's
just thrown in a box and shipped off. No packaging, no nothing. You never know.
That's one of my pet peeves. People don't know how to ship and pack records. I take great pride in that.
It's a big pet peeve when I collect Funkos, too. And it's a big pet peeve in that field. It's like, if you don't know how to fucking package it, if you buy something from Amazon or whatever, you don't know if you're going to if it's going to come all broken, you know? Don't know. Vinyls, it's how the post office treats shit.
Oh yeah, no, I've seen some. I just recently had to actually refund someone about $67 because I shipped them a couple of records, well packed, properly packed. I actually shipped them right after Tropical Storm Imelda. So it was like 2 or 3 days. It was the Saturday after the storm had hit and passed. And I was like, okay. I even told the guy, I'm going to wait till after the storm passes to ship it, just because there will be delays and potential issues. Anyway, he gets the record and it's soaked. He gets the records and the box is soaked. I mean, it's literally like it had been
drowned,
submerged,
like held underwater for a long time. So everything was ruined. I had to completely refund him. One of the records was an original Alice Cooper, Love It to Death, 1971, with the penis cover, which is where Alice is sticking his thumb out through his kimono. And it's actually a really rare cover. And it's like, yeah, you post office jerks. Like, what did you do? Did you leave this in a puddle? Did you like take a bath with it and then deliver it? Like, I don't know how you completely managed to, you know, submerge it and dampen it through. But anyway, that just goes to show, support your local record stores.
Yes, for
and,
sure.
Enjoy the hunt. You know, that is part of the fun, but at the same time, don't get consumed by the hunt. Don't get consumed trying to find this or improve this copy of this or trying to find that unicorn. You know, if it's meant to happen, you'll find it. If not, just enjoy yourself. You know, that's what
it's the thrill of the hunt.
Going back to vinyl, it's the thrill of the hunt. It's the thrill of the to have and to hold experience. And that's
it is.
You know, enjoy yourself. It's not a competition. It's not a game. Yeah, I have a lot of records. I'm actually thinning out my collection. I realize, hey, I don't need 5 copies of Judas Priest Painkiller. I love that record. But, you know, I'd rather share that music, and I'm actually thinning my stuff out. Every day I become a little less of a collector in the sense of, like, having multiple copies of albums or variations or whatever. And I'm ultimately going to get to a point where I'm happy just having one copy of every record and you know, it's a different journey for everyone. You know, hard media, collectibles, it's an easy rabbit hole to get sucked down.
Yeah, because I don't do vinyl because it's so expensive.
It is.
So many bands I like and stuff. So I used to collect CDs, or, you know, just amass CDs. Not so much being a collector of CDs, just being a completionist of bands' discographies.
I'm a completionist, certain bands.
They released a shitty live album. I had to have the shitty live album. And
yeah, I know.
And I stopped. I just stopped. I just forced myself to stop. It's like just enough.
Yeah.
And you know, but I do miss going to a store and the excitement of like, oh, what am I going to buy today? Because that's gone for me, essentially. Now it's just about discovering bands on Spotify or whatever. But I miss having that kind
but
of...
But me and you, we get a lot of promos, too. So we discover bands that way as well.
Yeah,
and
but
we do
again,
some...
they're all digital.
It's all digital now.
I've been doing the Metal Pigeon since 2011. I've gotten one physical product promo made
really?
To me. Yeah.
When I used to do, back in the late 90s, when I started Mainstream Resistance, it was all physical media. It was all promos, you know, the little flat cardboard.
Yeah.
Sleeves, yeah. Yeah, I have
promo flats with the media.
Yeah, I have thousands of those upstairs in a closet. And, you know, then at one point they started putting their the watermarks all over them on the CDs. And it's like,
yeah,
I mean, I can understand digitally because, you know, we're not getting into that. But,
yeah.
So going back to vinyl, man, what was that first vinyl that you redid? You're like, you know what? I'm into this. I want to start doing this as a, you know, a collector thing.
Well, I'll try to keep this as quick as possible, and I will try to be quick. But my vinyl obsession and interest started when I was, I would say, about 13. I was born in 86, and so I had the privilege of going to the UK every summer and every winter growing up. I'm half Welsh. My father's side of the family is all Welsh. My mother's from Texas. Anyway, so I've always been torn between sort of two worlds. And I had the privilege of going to the UK and Wales every summer and winter. I'd spend 3 months every summer, and I'd spend a month every winter. So basically a third of my life growing up I spent in Wales. Long story short, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, vinyl, for all intents and purposes, was dead. And I would go to what they call car boot sales, and antique shops, and they still had old music shops. And I would go and I'd get, you know, crazy records. I have an original Black Sabbath, 1970, a Philips product on the label, you know, Vertigo Swirl label, Swirl inner sleeve. It is the original real deal 1970 Black Sabbath record. I got that for £10, which at, you know, now works out to, I think, about $7.
Wow.
And that's now, you know, a $500 record in the condition that I have it in. So I was very fortunate. I actually had records given to me in my late teenage years from friends in the UK. Vinyl was just dead. It was just like, you know, it's funny. CDs were more expensive than vinyl. Now it's, yeah, you know, it's so strange to have seen the flip flop. And, another funny thing I'll tell you real quick, Sound Exchange, you know, a record store here in town. Sorry, I'm talking loud. Sound Exchange, a store here in town. It's since moved over to the east side.
Yep.
But when they were at their location at Hazard in Richmond, I went in there as a, I think, 14, 15-year-old. I flipped through a bin of metal records they had. There's a signed Rust in Peace copy, original 1990.
Wow.
Capitol, Rust in Peace. Guess how much it cost?
$20.
$5.99.
Wow.
$5.99. Signed by Nick Menza, no longer with us, Marty Friedman, Dave Ellefson, and Dave Mustaine.
See
and
that hanging on the wall right there, that Persistence of Time?
Yeah.
Same thing. Got that at Sound Exchange.
I believe it.
It was like $15, signed by the entire band. I'm like, original printing.
I can't tell you how much fun it was to go to my every Saturday I would go, or yeah, one of those days I would go with a friend of mine to Sound Exchange. And like to walk in that little dungeon in the back.
Oh, the metal section, the metal dungeon in the back. I love that. Yeah. And that's where I found the Megadeth record.
So much fun.
Well, speaking of Sound Exchange, we're all friends of them. We all know them really well. We're probably going to be doing some live episodes from their store pretty soon.
Hell yeah. Kurt and Kevin, you rule.
Right. We're just trying to figure out scheduling and stuff like that. So we're trying to get some special guests to come on and just have a good time, man. Have some free drinks and, you know, podcast in a metal store. Pretty cool.
Free drinks and metal, can't go wrong.
That's right. Let's talk about the Facebook group you're an admin of.
Sure.
The Asylum. What's the full name?
So the full name of the group is the Record, Cassette, and CD Asylum. So I don't
mostly
know.
Metal.
It is mostly metal.
90% metal, I would say.
There are groups on Facebook. There are still tape heads and people that love cassette tapes. There are people that only collect CDs. There's people that only collect vinyl. What you will find online on Facebook and with most online Facebook or online media groups is that they're either tape-oriented, they're CD-oriented, or they're vinyl-oriented. We try to cater to all three of those. Yeah, we don't allow 8-tracks. We don't allow reel-to-reel. You know, we don't want to get too crazy or mini discs, you know, weird formats that, you know, there's some weird guy.
Forgot about mini disc.
You know, there's some weird guy in New Zealand who's like, I only collect mini discs, you know, whatever. But, you know, we try to allow, you know, we open the doors to all three media formats. Now, the event we have, the events we run and the events that we promote and we have from time to time, those are vinyl only events because vinyl is... In our opinion, and I think with most hard media collectors or music fans, they would agree that vinyl is king, you know.
Sure.
And so
I rarely see CDs in that group.
Right. And we kind of had a CD and not really a CD war, but we had a tape war. Because what will happen, these people come out of nowhere and they find, you know, 500 tapes up in grandma's attic. And what they'll do is they'll dump, you know, in one big post, here, look, you know, I've got 500 tapes. And it ends up being like, you know, 100 comments of, oh, I want this tape. Oh, never mind. I'll take this one. Or I want those three or whatever. And it's just tapes when they generally sell for like, $2 to $5 a pop.
Right.
It made the group feel like it was some type of garage sale or junk sale. And so we scaled down and limited CD postings and tape postings. Vinyl postings have the least amount of restrictions. But anyway, that's how our group operates.
I got some great vinyl from that group.
Awesome. So I started the group with a friend of mine in Miami. His name is Luis Ramirez, and another friend of mine in West Virginia. His name's Keith Tabler. And the three of us are all very different politically. We all have, you know, we all generally love metal and hard rock. We have all our, you know, all our differences. You know, we give Luis, you know, trouble because he loves trouble so much. I love trouble, but
I love trouble.
Yeah, but we give him hell. Actually, we all got together in the group and secretly bought him Manic Frustration.
Oh, wow.
The original Trouble album on vinyl. Everybody pitched in like $5, and then I paid $200 to pull that record from over in Italy from Geppetto, you know, in some small Italian town. It's a really hard record to find.
It really is.
But anyway, the three of us are very different personalities, and we all, you know, meld our strengths and differences to create the group as it is. And we've got a great event coming up this weekend, October 26th and 27th. We do it twice a year, generally. We call it Super Metal Sunday, and we have great guests that are part of the event. In the past, we've had Brian Tatler from Diamond Head, Biff Byford from Saxon, Vinny Appice from Black Sabbath. We've had blah 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 blah. Gosh, let me think. God, what's his name? Michael Graves from Misfits. I'm just throwing some random names. Lita Ford. You know, we've had some really good guests. We've got some great ones this time around that, you know, we haven't, you know, shared with the world yet, but we will.
Looking forward to that.
But we will soon. And if you're listening to this, feel free to look up the record, cassette, and CD Asylum exactly as it sounds. Send us an ad request. There's three simple questions. We'd love to have you buy, sell, trade hard media without any overbearing administrative rules. We try to be laissez-faire as possible, and we like to consider ourselves a heavy metal family.
And that's where we actually became friends. It was in this group. Then I realized, oh, fuck, you know a lot of people that I know. And I think
That's true. I didn't realize that. It was actually, and it's funny how people I know have stumbled into that group. Or people I've just taken for
granted. Now Fraser's in it.
I let him in, I know. And he loves, bloody Fraser. He loves posting his, like, CDs. But, it's cool to see my friends that I've taken for granted that actually through that group I've met them.
Yeah.
And other people that I knew before who my relationship with them has only strengthened because of it. You know, it is the metal that binds us.
Well, so. thanks for selling me Keeper of the Seven Keys 1 and 2 on vinyl, which is this is going to segue into our next track.
Hell yeah.
We're going to play one of your favorite Halloween songs, one of my favorite Halloween songs, one of Sean's favorite Halloween songs.
Yeah.
And I think my wife in the other room, one of her favorite songs.
Is it In the Spirit of the Season by any chance?
Yes, because Halloween is coming up. We could play Halloween.
Oh, we're gonna do the other one. Very good. God, it's great to be alive.
Are you alive?
I'm alive.
All right.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the show, episode number 227 of MSRcast. We just got finished listening to some, I think this band's sort of new on the scene. Was it Iron Maiden? How do you pronounce that?
Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden? Is that how it's pronounced? Yeah. I think these guys have a future in the metal industry. What do you think?
Promising?
Yeah. Yeah, they're on their way.
Let's check in back in like 45 years. So, why did you pick Sea of Madness?
I picked Sea of Madness because it's quite possibly my favorite Iron Maiden song.
Didn't you just get that vinyl signed?
I did, thanks to you, my good man.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yes.
Pat myself on the
yes,
back here.
Yes, can you hear the pat? Yes, that was me patting Carrie on the back.
Yeah, no. When we mentioned that on the show last time, yeah. When I went to the Derek Rigg signing. Yeah,
That's an underrated song.
No, so Iron Maiden is probably my single favorite band. I'm a Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Thin Lizzy kind of guy. I guess I have a thing for twin guitar leads and a badass bassist. Even though Ian Hill doesn't get a whole lot of love out of Priest, but no, Sea of Madness, I just think is a brilliant song, and I feel like it's other than maybe Deja Vu, it's a song off Somewhere in Time that doesn't really get a whole lot of love.
Oh yeah, it's overlooked.
I think the bass playing is fantastic.
I think that album
it's an Adrian Smith song, and I'm a sucker for Adrian Smith.
I think that album entirely gets overlooked.
Yeah, no, that well, and Bruce hates it. I mean, that's why you only ever hear Wasted Years and maybe Heaven Can Wait. You never hear Caught Somewhere in Time. You never hear Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner. You never hear Alexander the Great. You sure as hell, you know, Sea of Madness hasn't been played since they're somewhere on tour, you know, 1986 tour.
I just heard recently Wasted Years. You want to segue into that?
Wait, what do you mean? Like, you heard it for the first time?
No, I heard it live.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. We just heard it live. Yeah.
Yeah, all right, let's talk about
that.
Wait,
they didn't play it on this last tour.
I'm not talking about Iron Maiden.
It's true, they did not.
Oh, what, the Iron Maidens?
No, not the Iron Maidens. What? She is an Iron Maiden, though.
What in the bloody hell are you on about?
I'm talking about Annika van Giersbergen.
Oh, did she play that?
She played Wasted Years.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It is a heartstring tugging type song, and I do love it, but it is, for me, getting to a point of being somewhat overplayed, or it's like... It doesn't quite fall into Trooper territory or Fear of the Dark territory, but it's kind of getting there. Like, you know, Fear of the Dark, Trooper, I'm tired of those songs. I kind of wish they'd put them to the side.
Yeah.
But I know that, like, the 15-year-old kids out there that are going to see Maiden for the first time, they want to hear the Trooper.
Right.
And I think it is a great song. And don't get me wrong, as is Wasted Years. Wasted Years is a very moving song.
They didn't play that live, did they?
Wasted Years?
On the last tour?
Yeah.
They did.
No, they played nothing. Iron Maiden played nothing off of Somewhere in Time on this last.
They did at the Toyota Center, though, right?
They did at the Toyota Center. Yes. Yeah. They did Wasted Years then, but they did not play it on the last tour. But going back to Sea of Madness, it's just an oft overlooked song, and I think it, like I said, it may be my favorite Iron Maiden song. I love the way the two verses flow into the guitar solo,
yeah,
and then you have that kind of like. Like, I think the bass playing is great. I just think it's an incredibly well balanced and not a drawn out Iron Maiden song. And that's that's one of my minor complaints about Iron Maiden is that
an incredible vocal by Bruce.
Oh God, he sounds so good. He sounds so good on that track.
Did that
he was so full in life because he was starting to get burned out by Seventh Son. You can only do so many tours and so many albums year after year. And they were just on fire. Maiden was on fire up through Seventh Son.
Somewhere in Time was the album where he wanted to start when the songwriting process for the album began. He was introducing acoustic stuff and ideas that Steve Harris was, you know, kind of like, what the hell are you doing, man? And so there's a little bit of frustration you can hear on that album from him if you really pay attention a little bit. And then Seventh Son kind of reignited him into the band a little bit, his interest. But yeah, he was a little bit checked out on that. I mean, his performances are great, but the commitment, I think, to some of the material, it's interesting. That, like Caught Somewhere in Time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's kind of an underwhelming song.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like him. He doesn't give his best vocal on that song.
I don't know about that. I'd argue he doesn't sing it because it is a vocally demanding song. Singing Caught Somewhere in the register that he sings it over and over again and doing the whoa. I'm tone deaf. That's why I play bass. But anyway,
but when I hear like when I hear
that's why you're not a real musician, right?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm just some guy that hangs out with a band.
When I hear what he does in the Sea of Madness and stuff like that, and just the ideas he does there, you can hear a lot of that inspiration for like what you'd later hear in his solo career, mm-hmm. you know, and like the way he'd do different things with his voice and phrasing on Chemical Wedding and Accident of Birth, all that kind of stuff.
Did that song make you feel alive?
I feel like I'm constantly swirling in the sea of madness. I mean, we all are. I think, you know, it goes back to the whole Dio, you know, heaven and hell are not two separate places. It's here. It's all around us, you know.
He's not picked up on your awful segues.
He has not.
I'm sorry. What was your – I'm sorry.
My awful segue was, does that make you feel alive?
Oh, yes. It does make me feel I'm alive. Yes, I feel alive.
Very good.
I'm nowhere near as good as Kiss K. You're welcome to
put
me out of my misery.
Nobody in the world is as good as Kiss K.
Oh, God. He was so good last fall when I saw him.
Let's talk about that. I saw him in Chicago. You saw him in Vegas, right?
And Iron Maiden's my favorite band. I've seen him so many times. But that Halloween show, I mean, that was heaven on earth, man. That was heaven and hell. It was the cosmos exploding. It was the planets aligning. It was freaking amazing. I never thought I'd hear Rise and Fall. I'd never thought I'd, you know, hear so many of those songs. And I'd waited since
the Kai Hansen
2003. I saw Halloween last time in Houston, 2003 Rabbit Don't Come Easy tour at the Engine Room. I was 15 or 16 years old.
Who did they play with?
God, Omen opened for them. And then a local band, Well of Souls.
I remember I was working that day and I couldn't get off and I was so pissed off.
The only time I'd ever seen Halloween before was actually in Chicago visiting family. I'm like, what's going on? Well, my aunt used to live there. My grandma used to live there. What's going on? I'm like, oh, Halloween's fucking playing. Jag Panzer's opening up. Yeah, I'm going. I took a taxi over there.
Wow,
to the
Jag
club.
Panzer opening. That's cool.
It was with Chris Broderick and everything. It was amazing.
Wow.
And the opening band, for some reason, was Pissing Razors. And they fucking remembered me from like being in, you know, they toured around here a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I interviewed them a few times. And one of the dudes came up to me after, like during the show. He was like, aren't you from Houston, dude? I'm like, yeah. It was weird. It was nice. Pretty cool. Because they think they were from El Paso or something.
Yeah, I grew up in El Paso. That's another long story.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, actually, I liked El Paso. I was kind of bummed when I moved to Houston. I stepped out. I felt that humidity. I was like, yeah. Well, I'm moving here. I don't know if I can do this.
It's true.
It was August, too, so I was kind of like not the best time to move here. But
you have to fucking like take a knife to get out of your...
Yeah, pretty much. I coming from a dry climate, I'd never experienced that kind of humidity. But anyway... Back to Halloween.
Amazing fucking show. I just got the Blu-ray. We were watching that a little bit earlier.
I'm waiting for my DVD in the mail. I'm not cool. I don't have a Blu-ray player. I'm all like nostalgic with my turntable.
Buy the $30 Blu-ray player at Best Buy.
They cost now? Yes. I know I sound so
they're,
dumb, they're but like I don't cheap. Even know. I don't even know.
Yeah,
what
you can
goes.
Get one pretty cheap. They're I watch mine. Cheap. I have an Xbox One that I watch it on. So.
I remember getting a PlayStation 2 when DVD was like revolutionary, and that was like the big sales point of the PlayStation 2. It plays DVDs and it plays games. So I'm stuck somewhere in 2002 and before. So the same could be said for my music taste. So
again, thank you for my vinyl copy of Keeper of Seven Keys Part 1.
You're welcome.
It was amazing.
Hold up
I
your
finally,
soul.
I got the last one they put out.
The last album?
No. The last Keeper of Seven Keys, the trilogy.
Oh, the Legacy.
The Legacy.
I love that album. It's double album.
I picked that up on vinyl in San Antonio a few weeks ago.
Have you listened to it, or are you familiar with the album?
Oh yeah, I know the album.
Yeah, yeah. I like it. It was met with.
I have actually a CD promo of that album.
Nice. Yeah. It was met with a weird reaction, but I loved it when it came out. It actually got me.
Wasn't Mrs. God on that album?
Mrs. God.
Yeah.
Are you there?
It's a fucking great song.
Laughing at us is not fair. It's a really dumb song about kind of being at odds with your maker. I like it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go back and revisit it. My experience with that album was very unpleasant.
There are some stinky tracks. There are, and it's a double album. They probably could have shortened it to it just being a normal album.
I'm in such a Halloween fan groupie mode that I love Unarmed.
See, now you want to go back to vinyl. That's an album that's
Oh, God.
That's one of two albums I'm missing. I'm missing Seven Sinners, and I'm missing Unarmed. And Unarmed was a weird experiment in lounge music Halloween.
I think it worked, though.
Are you really missing it?
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't like it?
No.
Oh, God.
It was weird. It was weird. I won't say I like it. I like the sentiment of it. That's my favorite thing about Halloween is the goofy, you know, they know how to make fun of themselves.
Yeah. Yes.
They know how to, you know, they're not too serious. You know, they're not one of these, you know, type of metal bands. Like, they have fun and they're goofy. And
my wife's walking into the room. It's her favorite Halloween album.
Wait, Unarmed is?
Yes.
What?
Oh.
And I still married her.
God, do we have the materials for an exorcism?
I personally enjoy that album as well. I love the Keeper trilogy on that album.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best part on there. But I don't know. There's something about it that's sort of it's quirky. It's fun. It's
Lounge Dr. Steen on a woman.
Lounge Dr. Steen is pretty good.
Like, it's kind of weird, but it's Halloween, so it's supposed to be weird. It works.
I'm going to make you like that album, Sean.
Yeah.
Not going to happen, huh? Let's talk about our next band that we're going to play. Oh, yeah. You know, before we go on, we segued a minute ago into Annika playing Wasted Years. Let's talk about that before we move on.
Yeah, you first.
What can I say? I'm speechless now as I was at the show. I bought VIP tickets for my wife and myself just because I wanted to meet Annika. I've met Amorphis a few times doing VIPs. They're amazing. So the signing was weird. It was Amorphis at one end and then Annika in the middle and then Delane at the end. I brought a couple things for Amorphis to get signed, but majority of my shit to get signed was from Annika. And I had a stack of stuff for me and my wife had a stack of shit to get signed. And what did she say to you at one point? She's like, you have such a collection. A lot of good stuff here. And she's like, no, it's all him. And I was being pushed down to Delane already. I'm like, no, I don't want to move. But I was trying to be nice to them, too, because the singer of Delane was sitting right next to Annika, and she was already starting to talk to me.
Okay.
I was like, I don't really know your music or anything, but hey, what's going on? Thank you guys for being here.
How many people did the VIP,
do you think? Maybe 25, 30-ish. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
They did a group photo session, so each person got to go into like a group with all three bands. And of course, I saw somebody before me, like, "Hey," asking Annika, "Can't get a selfie?" So I did the same thing, got my selfie then. And then after the signing, after the photo op, Annika was just hanging out doing photos with people. So that's when Kim and I, my wife and I, got a photo with her.
Nice.
But you saw her after the show. She was just hanging around taking photos with everybody.
Right.
It's crazy. I'm like, this is pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, William, he's a metalhead, but he's also like a country guy because he plays in like rockabilly bands.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. So he was all excited to meet her. It was an amazing night. I regret the one thing I didn't get to bring to get signed was I was thinking about it, getting a Holitar vinyl to get signed by Tomi.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, that would have been good.
And then I could have got...
You just can't do it all, man. I know
you can't.
Yeah, and that's what it was like when you were going to get stuff signed for me by Derek Riggs. I was like, you know, Iron Maiden, my favorite band. I'm like, what albums? It's tough, man.
It really is tough. I only brought two to get signed by him as well.
And you don't want to overwhelm these people. I mean,
I think guys at comic shows, they'll bring... they have to bring him on, like, dollies and shit because there's so many comics. And they're just like, here, sign this. And there's like 150 comics. It's like, dude... That's too much,
dude. That's excessive.
It is.
People really do that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I feel bad. I haven't been to a comic con or a horror con or these big. They're totally right up my alley, and I'll eventually make time for them. But I can't believe people bring that volume of stuff.
It's crazy. Insane. It's insane. And then some people is like some of the comic guests are like you know that are you know historic you know guests. They'll sign maybe your first four or five for free, and then they'll start charging you. Because after that, they're like, you're just selling the shit on eBay, man.
Well, and that's the thing, too. And I make it clear to artists when I meet them. And I'm a big advocate. Like, I'm more of a fan than a musician. I make it a big point to let these people know this is for me. I don't like go out and do this eBay baloney. And so, and that's why I always say, if you want to just sign it, that's fine. If you want to personalize it to me, that's cool. I give them that option. I let them know.
So they know.
They're comfortable. Like, dude, I'm not just some guy who's trying to make a buck off of eBay. I think that's crap. And it takes away the spirit of the music for me.
Right.
I definitely buy, sell, trade records and stuff. But I don't exploit musicians for their work or for their time.
So let's go back to the show real quick. So the lineup was Masked, which is a local band featuring Eric Halperin.
Seen him a couple times.
Yeah. And then Annika came up on stage, did an acoustic show. All acoustic stuff. Blew everybody away, I think. Yeah. Everybody was so impressed with what she did.
It's just her and the
She's so likable and so just adorable charming. And charming and just like a perfect person. not that I'm trying to like get with her or anything.
Was she maternal? Did she hold you in her arms?
I wish.
She wishes.
Heard your wife. You wish.
But she was such the just a personal person.
That's
that
awesome.
She cares about her fans that were there. It was just, she mentioned right before she did Valley of the Queen from Arion. She's like, oh, there's people here in Arion shirts, and I'm like, hey, right here. It was an amazing. Her set list was great. She did everything from Devin Townsend to Arion, to her Floyd solo covers. Stuff, Pink Floyd, like Kate Bush.
Stone Unturned. She
did Iron Maiden.
She did
Maiden.
Her influences and she did her past.
She did Iron Maiden, Wasted Years. She did fucking
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton.
Wow.
Jolene.
Nice.
Which was weird but cool.
It shouldn't have worked.
No.
A solo performance with just an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
Doing kind of jang. But she was good on guitar.
Yeah.
Like, very lyrical way of playing.
Like, that really jangly guitar.
And those are great moments in music. That shouldn't have worked, but it did.
And
you know, John was with me, and he had no idea who she was. He knew that she was used to be the singer of some band. So, and he walked away a fan. He was like, oh, that was great. I was really impressed, and she's so likable and stuff. So
yeah, she really is. She feels like she's so shy about it, so humble.
Right.
That's what makes it so adorable in a way. You know what I mean?
Right.
She's like, oh, I don't know. Is this something? And she's doing this on tour. Like, how many dates?
Right. Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing. And then Amorphis came on. Fucking so much energy, more energy than they did last time. We've talked about this. Didn't like them last time they played.
I thought, yeah, they more than made up for last time.
What happened last time? They were lackluster.
They just look like.
I don't know if they were lackluster, but. They
looked like they had just woke. Their energy level seemed like they had just woken up and had not had coffee yet. And they were just like plowing through this terrible set list of their new album, which is
lackluster. Disagreed. We'll
agree to disagree on that.
Okay.
But this time
we've touched this subject before.
This time it was more of a best of set. They played a lot more.
Testy subject here.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff from Queen of Time.
Yeah.
I mean, they played like five or six songs off this new album.
There was only one song I didn't like. So.
What's that?
The Wrong Direction, the single.
I love
the
that last
song. It's the worst song they've ever written.
Oh, whatever.
God awful.
Whatever. But Annika
I was like checking my fantasy football score during that song.
Brutal.
Annika came back out during Among Stars from Queen of Time and performed live with them, which was amazing. I was like, she has to come out and perform with that song. Yeah. You know what I mean? We left during the lane. I'm not a big fan of them, but. I think we maybe saw two or three songs, heard two or three songs, and then we took off.
Yeah. That sounds like it was enough.
It was about enough.
Yeah.
About enough when they played with Halloween or Hammerfall a couple years ago.
I respect Dwayne for the fact they come out here and they tour in the States. And
yeah.
They always seem to give 100%. Like, you know, they want to.
They have a huge fan.
They have a huge fan base.
So.
You know, they're just not for me.
Fair play to bands like that. There's bands I've seen that, and I've seen several times that I don't like, but I'm like, man, those guys, those people are a touring machine.
Yeah.
And they care about their fans, they care about their craft, and you know, mad respect for that alone.
It's going to get them somewhere, because, I mean, it's getting them somewhere now.
Yeah.
They have a huge name underneath them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So touring and respecting your fans is like the the best things you can do.
Right.
Look where it got Sabaton.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I remember seeing Sabaton play for 30 people at Scout.
I was there.
And now they're like playing in venues that are way too small for them, clearly. What? On their current tour, have you watched any of those Instagram videos?
No.
They need to be in bigger venues. The crowd is like compressed.
When we saw them at Scout Bar last time, it was like nut to butt. You had to turn sideways to see the stage. It was so crowded in there.
Yeah.
Compared to the first time we saw them. The first time we saw them was Accept.
Right.
And then they came back.
That was a big crowd because of Accept.
And they came back not too long after that with their solo show.
Yeah.
And it was just them and some local stuff, right?
Yeah.
And there was like 30 people there.
30 people, yeah.
They're taking fucking requests and shit.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's get into our next band for the episode, In Mourning. Do you know much about these guys?
Yeah, we played them in 2016.
We did.
For their last record.
Yeah. I've been a fan of these guys for a while. This album,
I didn't like that record completely, but I do like the band.
This album is, I feel it's more progressive.
Okay.
Like the first part of this song we're going to play tonight is called Black Storm from the album Garden of Storms. It's very death doomy, November's Doom style.
We were thinking Opeth.
Yeah,
I
was going to say, is this the Ghost of Perdition ripoff?
Oh.
No, I'm not going to be that harsh.
Ripoff?
But it does sound like mid-2000s Opeth.
Homage.
It's quite. It's an homage to mid-2000s
Opeth. It's fine they sound like Opeth, because Opeth doesn't sound like Opeth.
I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining.
Opeth does not sound like Opeth, so somebody has to, right?
Yeah.
Lucidity has to sound like Opeth this year.
Yeah.
So let's get into In Mourning. This is Black Storm from 2019's Garden of Storms, and we'll let you guys hear it for yourself.
Do it.
Hey, welcome back to MSRcast 227, referencing some show we've never heard of. And
you're going to go Google that shit, man. Right. You'll be like, all right, I've seen this.
We were just listening to Blut aus Nord,
Blut,
which is the French black metal band that no one knows anything about, who's in the band or whatever.
The mystery.
I didn't know them until now, and I would highly recommend.
We've talked about them before on the show.
We've played them before on the show.
Like Saturnian Poetry was the album that I was like a big fan of a couple years ago. Yep. It was my top 10 list that year in 2014.
Back in the, if you're a fan of the show and you've been listening for a long time, Papa Josh used to play them all the time.
Yeah, yeah. The last album was weird, and we both didn't like it. It was a little too avant-garde, and whoever this guy is, has a tendency to do that.
Yeah.
This album is really different. I guess he got tired of doing all that stuff. And decided I want more major chords in here. I want like clean guitars and like kind of vocal choirs in the background. They're like underneath the guitars. And he's got some rockin' riffs in there sometimes where it's just stuff you don't associate with the avant-garde French black metal. and I'm totally captivated by this album. It's such a great, unique listen. And it's kind of got this psychedelic vibe running through it, which, you know, plays into the title of the album is Hallucinogen. And it's got these big alien mushrooms on the cover. Alan, it's such,
you must take mushrooms to enjoy this album.
It's strange. Really. The vocals are so hidden in the album that it almost sounds instrumental, but it's not. You know?
That's a good observation, actually. And like I was commenting while we were listening to it here, the extreme vocals were layered down in the mix, and I thought that was actually really effective. Normally, you know, a vocalist is either near the top of the mix or above the mix.
I think that, like, with the French black metal stuff, because Alcest is releasing something really soon.
Right.
There's something – I think a lot of those guys are trying to break out of that.
You can't really consider Alcest really black metal anymore.
No, but I think a lot of these guys are trying to do different things now, because I think for a lot of them, maybe I'm just guessing here, but I'm thinking maybe a lot of that French black metal sound it's been kind of too copied by a lot of American bands now, and so the originators are trying to kind of get away from it and do something different, which is clearly, I mean, this guy's been around forever, clearly he's trying to do on the Blut aus Nord record. So yeah, if you haven't listened to it, go check it out.
It's weird that they're from France, but their name is actually German.
Right, yeah. They're a weird band.
You got it right, Blood of the North.
The last
See, I know my metal.
Blut aus Nord.
I think the last album was like it was called something weird, like 777.
That's not the last album. There was three albums in a 2-year period that were 777.
Yeah, it was like, yeah.
This is their 13th album.
Okay, yeah. The 777s were difficult to listen to.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird band, but this is definitely the most accessible thing I've ever heard from them. So, yeah, that's a good starting point.
And before Blut aus Nord, we had In Mourning.
Yeah.
This is their fifth full length, something like that?
Right, yeah.
They are, we just talked about them a little bit earlier. You guys got a lot of Opesian vibe from them.
Sure.
Like mid-level Opesian. I heard a lot of November's Doom, like just Death's Doom, and there's a lot of clean vocals on this track. I really like the progression, and it starts off real heavy, and it sort of like tapers off, and then it gets back to it. I really like this band. This album it's really impressing me. This is their... They're from, where are they from? Sweden?
Yeah, sounds right.
Falun?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
There you go.
You could have said any city in Sweden, I would have believed you.
They're from Sweden City.
Sweden City, Sweden.
Nice place, I went there once.
Did you go to Sweden City?
Yeah, it was nice.
Is it the capital?
No, I believe that's Stockholm, but nonetheless, it was a nice place that I visited.
Is it really a Sweden City?
No, there is not.
God damn it. If there was.
But there's a Paris, Texas, man.
That is true. There is a Paris,
Texas.
There's
an Athens, too.
I'm really liking Garden of Storms. It's a really eclectic and progressive Death Doom album. And that seems to be a lot of what's on my list this year, man.
Right, yeah.
There's been a lot of that. And a lot of it's been really good. I don't want to give away too much because we'll talk about that later on in the year when we talk about our top albums. But a lot of my albums have been like progressive death doom, like mellow death style, you know?
Yeah.
It's been so much good shit this year.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Oh, what's been your favorite album this year?
Oh, bloody hell, man.
Never heard of them. Her Bloody Hammers.
What is my favorite album this year? I'm going to go ahead and, even though the album technically isn't released till tomorrow and it's not available, it's going to be The Scourge. It's going to be their new release. And
you've heard it already.
I've heard it all. Like I said, their bassist is my coach.
Yep.
Sensei, I love you. And you know, Andrew's one of my best friends, Alex as well. Those three guys, it is genuinely my most anticipated release of the year. I've heard the final cuts of all the songs, and I heard the development of them as things were getting mixed, and it's really an honor to have friends that like them that are that talented and put out music of that caliber, because they really they are now, and I'm afraid that they're going to continue to be an extremely underappreciated metal band, and there's just not a lot of this neo thrash stuff that I really like a whole lot.
And it's really
I don't mean to lump them into neo thrash just because, you know, they're a young new band, a new-ish, and Scourge has been around for years, so that's right. Not even fair to call them neo-thrash.
But they're not retro. That's the thing.
But they're not retro at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
They somehow do their own thing, and all three of those guys are extremely passionate about music.
They were lovely enough to play the benefit show for Bill Bates that I put on.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, was Hellstar played as well, and Oceans of Slumber, and all these amazing bands. And I have video footage of all that stuff, but it's no wonder why the guys in Hellstar picked, you know, Andrew and Garrick to be in their band. It's no fucking wonder. They're amazing musicians, really nice guys. They deserve all of the success that they're going to get with this album, I believe.
They practice. They take their craft seriously. Andrew does guitar lessons. Yeah, anybody can give guitar lessons, but one of my favorite things about Andrew Atwood, I remember, you know, him sitting down. He showed me, I think it was the Ride the Lightning solo by Kirk Hammett. Everybody knows that. You know, everyone knows that solo. He played it just like Kirk Hammett, and I was like, man, that's awesome. And then he's like, yeah, but there's no big dick vibrato. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, let me show you how. He says to me, I'll show you how I would play it. And he plays the Ride the Lightning solo, but like I've never heard it before.
Like it should be played?
I didn't realize how lazy. With all due respect, Metallica are legends. I mean, I'm not here to, you know, shit talk, but I didn't realize how kind of lazy and casual stroll through the park Kirk Hammett is as a guitarist until Andrew Atwood like brought that solo, which I thought was awesome.
I got news for you, dude. It's not just Kirk. It's pretty much the whole band.
Yeah, Hetfield's amazing, and he's going back into rehab. Now we're diverging into Metallica talk, but
it was cool. Yeah. I saw Zombieland 2, and the whole beginning. Remember the first one? It was, I don't remember what song. It was something from Kill 'Em All, wasn't it? Did you ever see that?
No. The opening. It's For Whom the Bell Tolls.
It was For Whom the Bell Tolls. The new movie. It's Master of Puppets. And it totally fits. I'm like, all right. I actually, this is a really good song. It works. It really fits. Yeah.
They had a certain energy about them up, you know, through the 80s, and then things fell apart. My guess is that it's the loss of Cliff Burton. He was a spark of insight for the other three, and unto himself he was
the loss of Cliff and all the mega success. Combination of probably both.
Yeah,
yeah, and the alcohol success. And the substance abuse. Yeah. And I mean, hell, Master of Puppets itself is all about a drug becoming your master. And,
yeah,
right. You know, are you the master or is the drug type thing? But
I mean, it was that fucking Black Album, man. It's just when you get that successful, it wasn't like that was a quick, it was like a steady rise. But when they hit that Black Album, they just fucking exploded.
Jet set status.
Yeah, and they just weren't, it's hard to, for the egos not to come in to be Well, when I sort of lost respect for Metallica was at Some Kind of Monster. Do you ever watch that documentary?
I'll be 100% honest. I only in the last year finally sat down and watched
okay,
it. So I have seen it. And
there's that segment where fucking Lars is trying to sell his painting, and he whines and bitches that his painting only sold for $1 million. I was like, all right, these guys are out of the metal league, and they're, I'm not a fan anymore. It was just, that was it. That was my moment.
Yeah. I felt the same way. It was fascinating to watch that, but I felt the same way. I was just kind of like,
They're the biggest selling. Yeah. They're the biggest selling band of an underdog genre.
Right.
You just can't look at them relative to the genre.
Right. Right.
In a lot of respects.
Fair. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Everybody in that band still. No, well, not everybody, but most people. And I'm talking about Lars. Phones it in.
In fairness, I finally, we're talking Metallica, I finally went and saw them in 2017 in San Antonio. I drove there. I stood in line for hours. I did rush to the barricade. I was front row watching Metallica. And nice. I had never seen them in my life. You know, really? for the big metalhead that I am, I'm like, all right, I'll go see Metallica. And of course, I love the 80s stuff. And I, you know, Reload was, you know, my era. When Reload came out, I was, 11, 12. That was the Metallica I knew. You know, some people are like, ha, ha, but that's what I knew.
Right.
But going and seeing them live, Lars actually sounded really good.
Who were they with?
They all played really Avenged Sevenfold.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, anybody after Avenged Sevenfold is going to make him sound good.
Yeah, I never got Avenged. But anyway, Lars sounded really good. Every member in the band sounded good and did their part. I was really impressed. You know, I was like, wow, this is a band that's not phoning it in, actually. Right. They're still at a, you know, and Kirk Hammett, you know, for all the grief I just gave him here on the show and for all the grief he gets, you know, I will say he hasn't kept up his chops like a lot of players from the classic days have.
Yeah.
You can tell that he's fallen off a bit, but he nailed the solos, and I was sitting there sober as a judge.
What year was this?
I couldn't. It was a year or two ago.
Wow.
It was the Hardwired tour, and it was in San Antonio, and it was at the biggest arena in San Antonio, and I was up front.
Have you seen them before, Sean?
A long time ago. Yeah.
I haven't seen them in a long fucking time. I think the last time I saw them was when Corrosion of Conformity opened up for them.
Yeah.
Like late 90s, 2000s. Mm-hmm. But I know the first time I remember the biggest show that I ever saw them do was the Astrodome with Guns N' Roses and Faith No More.
Wow.
1992, I believe.
Yeah, Black Album Tour. Holy smokes.
It was before you were born, right?
No, I was six. Jerk.
But I
get it. I missed the golden days. Okay.
I know I saw him. I know I hadn't seen him before that, but I don't remember. Yeah,
they impressed me a couple years ago. It might have been the awe and the spectacle of it all.
Maybe your first time. Yeah,
and it was my first time. But no, I had been standing for a long time. My legs didn't function right for a day or two after that because I had been standing for so long. But I met up with a friend of mine who held a place in line, and yeah, I was front row to Metallica, and I it was the only time in my life where I've been in a huge standing venue where I turn around and there's 20,000 people behind
me.
Yeah.
And that's a really weird feeling.
Did you bang your head the whole time?
I did. I enjoyed the show, and I liked the first half of Hardwired. It kind of trailed, that album trails off.
Dude, the first disc is excellent.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. I liked Halo on Fire, and they're great. They're great tunes.
Yeah, and the last song of the second disc, but most of that second disc sucked.
Yeah, and that is it. For some reason, that album trailed off. Metallica, I know I'm never going to get the Metallica of And Justice and Before, but they opened their encore with Fight Fire with Fire. I was just like, that's awesome. Oh, and nice, it sounded good.
So while you're here, dude.
It sounded the way it should have.
So while you're here, before we venture off for the evening, I have to ask you now, what was your very first concert you ever went to?
B.B. King. I was 9 years old. My mom took me to see B.B. King.
What was your very first metal show?
My very first metal show,
true metal show,
it would have to be Motorhead opening. Dio, the middle slot, and Iron Maiden headlining.
I was at that show.
And it would have been the Give Me Ed Till I'm Dead tour in 2003.
I was about to say 2003, right?
At Cynthia Woods.
Yep. I was there.
So I would have been 15 or 16. I would have been 16.
I was there.
Wow. I would have been 16. So that was my first legit metal show. Not long after that, I saw Halloween. Not long after that, I saw Judas Priest, because then they reunited. It was an exciting time to be a young metalhead. Like, I got to see Maiden doing a greatest hits tour. Bruce had come back into the fold. Brave New World was out. Dance of Death was about to be recorded.
Right.
Priest was reuniting. Motorhead, Lemmy was still healthy and strong.
My very first
Dio was still amazing.
Not to make
Heaven
you
and
feel
Hell was about to happen.
Not to make me feel old or whatever, but my very first Iron Maiden show was 1990. Was Anthrax opening up at the Summit? No Prayer for the Dying show.
Yeah, well, that album kind of sucks, so I'm not that jealous.
I like that album. What are you talking about? So who is your favorite band of all time?
My favorite band of all time?
Is it Iron Maiden?
It would have to probably be Iron Maiden. It's always been this rivalry.
Why aren't you wearing an Iron Maiden shirt now?
Because Overkill is like the Iron Maiden of thrash metal.
It's true. They put out more albums.
Dude, yeah, they're a machine. That is a machine. The D.D. Verney, Bobby Blitz duo, that is a wonderful, beautiful machine.
I had a great
long may it persist.
I had a lovely moment one time with Blitz on the phone right after he had
Gary, how you doing?
Make my shit go high.
Sorry,
there.
I'm sorry. I probably just broke the microphone. Me and Bobby Blitz.
We talked about his cancer for a while, and
I know.
And it was an emotional moment for us together.
It was a nose cancer.
Yeah.
Drug, right? Yeah.
Because my mom had passed away from cancer, and I was so proud that he had, you know, that he survived it and was living his life. And he was so kind and generous about it. He was such a cool guy. And I've seen them many, many times live. They're one of my favorite thrash metal bands of all time.
They'd probably be my favorite, and he's a hero of mine. I'm glad you had that significant connection. Unfortunately, not the best parallel that you drew with him, or the happiest, so to speak. But it was meaningful, and I'm glad you had that. And yeah, Bobby's an inspiration for heavy metalists everywhere, whether they be vocalists or play any type of instrument.
Do you have any questions that you would like to ask?
What do I got here? The Facebook group.
Sure.
I don't collect vinyl, so do you have to collect vinyl to join the group?
You don't.
I'm going to invite you in right now.
We're vinyl intensive. It is vinyl focused. It's vinyl oriented. We're mostly vinyl nuts. In all actuality, we're a little vinyl snooty. But like I said, like most of these groups are dedicated, you know, on Facebook to one media format or another. We try to allow it all because, and this is something I've pushed with the other two guys, is that, like, guys, this is about music above everything. This is about the love of music. This is about the relationships we build through music. This is about the feelings we garner and we cherish through music. It's more than just my media format's better than yours, you know?
Right, okay.
But
there's music discussions.
But that's just it, too. Like, you know, and I've encouraged that, you know. One of the guys didn't really like people talking and it being a discussion group. And I'm like, man, that's part of it. Like, we're building a community. Community is the most important part about this. You know, my favorite part of heavy metal is, you know, locking arms with my boys and like headbanging to, you know, Living After Midnight or Midnight Mover or some other song about midnight, 2 minutes to midnight, whatever, you know, it's the community. We you know, the three major formats, we try to be as egalitarian as we can.
And there's a lot of discussion about metal and different bands and stuff like that too. Cool. So it's fun. So if you guys are out there and you want to learn how to learn about collecting vinyl, CDs, cassettes, if you want, where can they go?
They can go to the Record, Cassette, and CD Asylum. Post any question you have. Post what you're playing. You know, we love now playing posts and talking about, you know, what people love, and just be yourself. It's half the battle. It's what my dad used to tell me. So come on in. And
that's what I heard from G.I. Joe.
Is that really something from G.I. Joe?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to give my dad some. I'm going to give my dad some beef in the next life.
So I guess that leads us to the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Thanks for hanging out with us today, Colin.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure.
I think we're going to talk about, let's talk about where people can find us first. And then we're going to talk about the last band of the evening, Erebator. So where can they find you, Mr. Sean, the Metal Pigeon?
At themetalpigeon.com and then at the Metal Pigeon Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
And you?
You can find me, Colin Elliott, on Facebook. Two L's, two T's in my last name, one L in my first name, C-O-L-I-N. You can also find me through Mr. Plow's band page. And then finally, you can find me more often than not through the Record, Cassette, and CD Asylum, which we've talked about a lot on the show. So
extensively.
Pretty much all through Facebook. The Record, Cassette, and CD Asylum would be the best place to find me. I'm usually hanging out there, and I'm an admin, and I'm overseeing the Circus of Freaks there. So,
of course, you can find MSRcast on – we're on iTunes. It's not really called iTunes anymore. It's sort of Apple Podcast or whatever they're calling it now. Yeah. Like us there. Subscribe to us there. Give us a review. You can find us on Spotify and Stitcher and Google Play. Any place you can find your podcast, any podcast catcher, you'll be able to pull MSRcast and Metal Geeks Podcast. We're the same feed. You can go to MSRcast.com. We have a new website for Metal Geeks. It's now MetalGeeksPodcast.com. You can find us on social media at MSRcast and at Metal Geeks on all the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. I think let's talk about our last band real quick.
Yeah.
Erebator, they're a Swedish band. This is maybe their seventh or eighth full length album.
Yeah.
Another band that I really love this year is Isol. Two of the members of this band, that's their other project.
Right, yeah.
So they got their name from it's a supplement to a Swedish fantasy role-playing game called Drakar och Demoner. Okay. So probably not saying that correctly, but they definitely are metal geeks, which is pretty cool. I really fucking love this new album. It's really fantastic so far.
Yeah. I mean, this is like the soundtrack to the season right now. Like it's autumnal and fallish,
autumnal
and spooky and a little rustic and woodsy and smoky.
Autumnal. It's a great word.
It is a great word.
'Tis the season.
It's autumnal.
It's the kind of music I want to hear right now, and gray skies and cold winds and stuff. And it's really.
We're about to get that tomorrow. So.
Oh yes.
It's about to go from like 85 to like 55.
Yeah.
Fucking thankfully.
Yeah.
About time. Yeah, I'm really digging this album. The name of the album is Jartaken, and it just came out the end of September. So, yeah, check out these guys, Erebator. I've been a big fan of them for a long time, and I know we've played them on the show before, and I've talked about them. So that's it. I think let's get into the song we're going to play, of course, is With Fire in My Heart. Thank you again to Sean the Metal Pigeon. Thank you to Colin for hanging out with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
As always, we have one last thing we have to say.
Keep it metal.
That's it. Can you say it?
Keep it metal.
Well, you sort of.
Out and meddled me, eh?
Keep it metal. Blah. Blah. Thank you.
Hey, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.